Well, if you don't like the way I'm running things around here, why don't you start a suggestion box?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 20, Parting Glances. Parting Glances. Glances parted. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah DiBattin.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. More like farting glances, am I right?
Yes, you are. That opening clip is very apropos because I wanted to start with a couple of suggestions from our suggestion box at our Patreon, which is patreon.com/againwiththis. These were both comments that were left on our most recent episode about Greek, the episode featuring Thomas Calabro. Catherine DJ suggested, please check out Jason Priestley on Haven, Season 2, Episode 4, Sparks and Recreation. He guest stars as Chris Brody and his Brandon Bray is in full effect. Nancy B. writes, I like this. I hadn't watched an episode of Greek before. In the future, you should recap an episode of Charmed. I like the ones when the original three sisters time travel. And she had another suggestion, which I will put a pin in for now, because as we mentioned in our last episode, we have three Patreon episodes dropping between now and the release of our book, a very special 90210 book, which is coming out September 22nd. And in those three episodes, we are going to be doing Let's Watch episodes of our Patreon for the remaining last three teen 90210 original cast members that we still haven't covered. Is Jason Priestley one of those? Yes. Is that episode what we have picked? Maybe. It's not, but we'll probably get around to that episode of Haven because I've heard that show is good. But first, for Again With This, episode 16, which is dropping August 21st, we're going to be talking about Girls Just Want to Have Fun, starring a very, very young, very adorable Shannon Doherty. That is available to stream for subscribers on Hulu and Amazon Prime. And if you are not a subscriber for either of those platforms, you can also buy or rent it at Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play. So if you want to hear us talk about that at length, because my computer is broken, so I had to print out my notes, and I have 8 pages of notes for this one, so it's going to be a longie. We haven't recorded it yet, but if you want to get in on that and also access all of our past bonus episodes, you can join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Gonna be fun. Will this be fun? Let's find out.
Look, girls just want it. We are girls. We will have it. That's it.
Nice. All right, let's get into farting glances. Haha. Starting with our D plot. Matt's integrity talks him right out of a relationship.
Oh.
You hate to see it. At Shooters, Jeffrey is telling Matt about this week's plot. His commander and mentor, who's also Jeffrey's father's best friend. Both of them apparently expected Jeffrey to be leading an officer's life by now, meaning be married with kids and a dog, socialize with other officers, etc. Jeffrey lives with the expectations, but it's not easy. He's even gone on blind dates the commander has arranged, but he's running out of excuses for why things haven't worked out. These are the problems Matt avoids, being out of the closet. Matt laughs that it doesn't solve everything, but it does feel good to be honest with his loved ones. And then he asks this, clip two.
So how long can you keep this up?
Okay, that's a really chirpy tone for a question that amounts to how long can you continue living a lie, Matthew? Jeez.
Yeah. Seriously. Like, this isn't a caper.
Right.
He could get court-martialed if he doesn't keep this up in a way becoming of an officer. So, yeah, tone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet, Jeffrey is just as casual as he shrugs that he doesn't know. Like there's a vice inside him that keeps getting twisted tighter and tighter, and Jeffrey can hardly breathe anymore. Half the time he's scared someone will blow the whistle on him, and the other half that he'll out himself. And Matthew, with the privilege of someone totally outside the situation, responds with a lecture. Clip three.
Jeffrey, until people are willing to stand up and be counted, policies like don't ask, don't tell will continue to tear us all up inside. You shouldn't have to lead a double life.
Look, usually I'm quite complimentary of Savage and feel like he does the absolute best he can with a role that nobody knew what they were doing with. But this writing, and I understand why this PSA was included, because it was not 2020 at the time and everyone was dumber then. But that's just disastrous. And he's just a real, like, the writing is terrible and his delivery, like, he's not helping it at all. Because he knows it's awful. Usually, he at least commits to it and, like, makes it less cringy, but not this time. This whole relationship. Sigh.
Yeah. It's really ham-handed. Anyway.
Yeah.
Jeffrey doesn't know if he can hold it together anymore. And apparently he meant it, because when we see him next, he's at Matt's saying he came out to his commander, and apparently he regrets it, and he blames Matt. Clip 4.
Was I out of my mind? Never should have listened to you.
Wait a minute. This was your decision.
Yeah, you couldn't possibly have known what it would mean.
Look, you're upset, and you're scared, and you want someone to blame. I understand.
No, you don't. I might have to resign or be discharged. I mean, do you understand how humiliated my father will be? It's my whole family.
I just think that you should wait to see what happens before you decide that this is a mistake.
It's easy for you to say with your cushy little hospital job.
Okay, you know, Jeffrey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that all this is happening, but to be honest, I don't know why you'd want to be part of the military to begin with.
What's that supposed to mean?
It's just that, why be part of an organization that is so closed-minded that they don't even want you as a member?
It's that organization that defends this country and allows you the freedom of thought you have. You get something real clear, Matt. I am damn proud of what I do.
Jeffrey.
Thanks for the beer.
I mean, it's shitty for him to blame Matt, but, like, why would you want to be in the military to begin with? Like, it's, I mean, he's not a mathlete. Like, have some, first of all, respect for the culture. Like, I shit on the military all the time. I was raised by an army brat. I get the instinct, but, like, not everybody has the choices you had, Matt.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it just feels like a very 90s position to be like, why do you even, for that to be the reason to ask, why do you even want to be in the military, as opposed to, like, you know, but the political reasons, as opposed to the political reasons that apply to you personally, you know what I mean? Like, it would not be out of the realm for someone who's a social worker, you know, and probably holds a lot of leftist/progressive positions to go on and be like, why would you want to be in an organization that props up American imperialism abroad or whatever? So, you know, to have it be this, the very selfish, I mean, obviously that's the discussion they're having. It's just very funny writing. That's all.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, a social worker would also see a number of his charges probably join the military to get out of abusive situations, to have a guaranteed education
and income,
et cetera, and so on. So whatever. Like, I am not the USAF's lawyer by any means. Mm-hmm. But, like, don't, like, can't you just have him be closeted for other reasons? Like, this show really needs to not stick its dick in that beehive, as they say.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, for as much shit as I give Will and Grace, they also had an episode where, or a short arc where Will was dating a closeted guy. And this was much later, like in the 2000s, probably, where he was played by Patrick Dempsey. And the reason that he was closeted was that he was a sports reporter, like an on-air TV reporter and covering sports.
Right.
And like that also, like, that made sense and was not so fraught, you know?
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Anyway. Where
back to this shitty show.
Indeed. So Jeffrey is in a uniform at his place when Matt stops by with surprise hockey tickets. Jeffrey testily waves him inside, whereupon Matt apologizes for what he said the night before. He also doesn't think that Jeffrey should resign and end his amazing career because people need role models like him. Jeffrey didn't mean to blame him. He was just panicking. Matt wants to be there for him if Jeffrey wants him to be. One of the reasons that Jeffrey's never had a long-term relationship is that most guys don't understand why he wants to be in the military, and he never met anyone they really wanted to explain it to either until now. And of course, in this very emotional moment, they shake hands on it, as you do when you're alone in your apartment with your boyfriend.
Who is wearing a uniform and is a four-star snack in it.
So the next day, Jeffrey finds Matt at the hospital and with basically no preamble announces that he got transferred. He asked for a transfer last year, so that might be why it's happening, but it's impossible to know if it's that or his coming out. They're sending him to the East Coast in the next few days. I swear to God, in my memory, this was like Matt's great love story, and it's, I mean, I know he comes back, but I remembered it going longer than this. It's only been three episodes.
Yeah, me too. At least, I mean, I think in the second, in the later iteration, it might go on longer, but I mean, they really chew through some plot.
Yeah.
Soapy.
So Matt's disappointed, of course, but Jeffrey grimly laughs that at least they didn't discharge him yet. They still could, and maybe he will wish that they had, and they discuss that in clip five.
What will it be like for you on the new base? More than likely, my reputation will precede me. After years of being known as a sailor of distinguished service, now I'll just be known as a sailor who's gay. I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. This is all happening so fast. I mean, not just the transfer. I mean, what does it mean? And for us. And when I met you, I thought, you know, dinner, movie. Jeffrey, I never wanted to see your life turned upside down like this. Dr. McCullen, surgery, please. Dr. McCullen. Sorry.
Matt, I didn't come here for an apology. I came here to thank you. The things may not be ideal, but they're better. They're honest. You know, my dad always said that a man's greatest virtue is to be true to himself. He's right.
I'm gonna miss you.
Yeah. Me too.
Well, nothing for it but one last chaste hug. It's very romantic. I will say, I feel like at the time, and I might be misremembering this, like I was, you know, vaguely aware, but I was in my late teens at the time. Like this, I feel like Don't Ask, Don't Tell was presented as like a great compromise policy. This really made it clear, like, no, this is still pretty bad.
Yeah,
like, this isn't really solved.
It was just one of those, like, yeah, nobody's happy with it on either side. So, yeah.
So I give them a tiny bit of credit for that.
Yeah.
Very tiny. Moving on to our C-plot. Sydney gets wise to the blood alcohol caper. Michael wakes up in a hospital bed, rolling over to see Sydney asleep in a chair next to it, which a nurse coming in says is against the rules. Sydney offers to leave as Michael mumbles, and the nurse says he'll be babbling like that for a while, adding that Sydney can have 5 more minutes, and then she has to go. And when they're alone, Michael starts making a little more sense in clip six.
Cops, I heard him talking. You gotta fix it, Matt. If Kimberly dies, I was drunk. Drinking, it's manslaughter, please, Matt. You have access. Change the records.
Michael, what are you talking about?
I go to jail, please. Matt, please. You gotta do it. Change the records, Matt. Please, change the records. Please.
Ooh. Sydney gives herself a little private evil smile at this because she figured out what he's saying. And the next day, she puts on her best Canadian tuxedo. We both lined up on that one.
Thought we would.
I have it in my notes.
Barry Dylan Luke.
When I opened the pictures that Sarah sent over, there it was in the file name. Thank you. Sydney goes back to visit and now fully conscious and cogent Michael, who is not happy to see her and refutes her claim of having saved his life. She needles that Matt told her Michael was on some kind of probation. Michael hand waves that he's on administrative duty, possibly for as long as a month. She shrugs that he should look on the bright side. No one's taking away his medical license yet. He regards her suspiciously, but before he can ask what she's getting at, the nurse returns and kicks Sydney out. And in the hall, Sydney asks the nurse where all the blood records are kept. Instead of asking why Sydney is asking such a weird question, she just says they're in central files. No, Sydney can't see them because she's not a hospital employee. Sydney drops Matt's name and the nurse says, sure, maybe Matt could access those files. So the next day, Sydney and her note-perfect 90s outfit, except for the white tights. Although, when I looked again, I couldn't tell if they were tights or maybe long johns. If they were long johns, I think that is very 90s.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, who was it on Real World San Francisco? Corey, I'm going to say? Who's
maybe.
Like notorious for her white tights. Like, I mean, it's not that the white tights aren't 90s. I'm pretty sure Nana Zuckerman sported a pair a few
for
times.
Sure.
They're just
not cool.
Like, yeah, well, they look terrible. Like, this is not someone whose legs would ever look chunky. And yet it's like two columns of cottage cheese walking down the hall. Like, it's just never a good look. If you're older than three, don't do it.
It's true. She's in like a flannel drop waist dress and eight hole docks. And then whatever are on her legs, possibly long johns, possibly like thick, you know, flannely tights. Cause they're not nylons. They're definitely not bad. Anyway, see that in the visual aids too, obviously. Sydney starts hectoring Matt about not being able to find Michael or get any information about his condition. Matt puts her off and tries to get rid of her, but she will not be flushed, and it doesn't take long for her to bring up the subject of blood alcohol testing. Matt has a pretty decent poker face, considering, which you can see in the visual aids. Sydney speculates that Michael was probably drunk the night of the accident and then laughs, so that Matt will laugh to match her and then leaves, and he tries not to freak out.
And he also is looking at Sydney like she's a snack, which is like, I mean, it's sort of him being freaked out, but it's also sort of them like falling in love, actors. So it's cute.
They're cute. The next day, Matt finds Michael in a file room to find out if he told Sydney about their whole blood fraud thing, which as far as Michael knows, he did not. He thinks Matt's being paranoid until he says that Sydney brought up Michael's blood alcohol level. But Matt says he didn't tell Sydney anything. So as long as he doesn't crack, there's no problem. And then we're watching Sydney bring Michael soup at work, which she intends to then carry from the hospital to the beach house to warm up. What? Whatever. He's in no mood to entertain her, not even for chicken with barley. So she has to make with the threats in clip 7.
I thought you'd like it.
What makes you think you know anything about me? Much less how I think.
The truth is, Michael, I know a lot about you.
I'm going home. Be a good girl, do the same.
I'll tell you one thing I know. Someone should have told you never to drink and drive. Good night, Michael. Sleep tight.
Ooh, that one landed.
Yeah, it did. I love how well Calabro manages in his interactions with Sydney. First of all, I forgot how much their relationship was completely based on her blackmailing him into being with her, like, from the jump.
Yep.
But also, I respect, like, there's always, like, he is 98% impatient and annoyed with and by her. But then there's always, like, when she pulls some shit like this, there's always a flicker of, like, game recognizing game. And I just enjoy that from him.
Totally. Yes. And those two actors also have such great, like, sparky comic timing. Like, they're really fun to watch together.
Yeah, it's true.
Now it is our B plot. Long distance doesn't work so well for Billy and Allison. Allison is leaving her apartment with a bunch of poster tubes and has just dropped one when Amanda comes down, gloatingly asking whether she had a rough night. Instead of saying no, Allison volunteers that she had a hard time falling asleep. Amanda guesses there's no word from New York yet, and Allison says Billy's phone hasn't been connected yet. Oh, no, it's an epidemic. See also Jeffrey. Also, he has one at the office, presumably, but Amanda gets ahead of that one, supposing that he doesn't want to make a lot of long-distance calls his first week on the job. Allison's like, totally. Also, the time difference, phone tag, etc. Amanda actually manages to sound sincere as she says it's hard to adjust to a new city, and Billy is probably just very busy, and Allison bitchily snorts at her anyway. Cut to some extremely aged Fifth Avenue B-roll you can see in the visual aids. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Like, there's ladies in hats. It's like from the late 1960s. I swear to God. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cut inside where Billy's colleague Greg is showing Billy around his gigantic office. This might be the Nancy's office set. Again, I couldn't tell, but it's...
It might be.
It's so big. Not even in the early 90s would a junior editor, or a senior editor for that matter, have an office with a door, never mind windows, and a seating area, and clip 8.
In New York, write a shared assistant, get monthly expense accounts, and have catered staff meetings every Monday morning.
I think I read doubts about moving here.
Yeah, well, shake it off, pal, because this is the city, and I am your personal key to it.
Cool. Thanks, Greg.
No sweat. Oh, well, that reminds me. Somebody named Allison called for you earlier. Is she business or pleasure?
Girlfriend, who I've been trying to reach, so actually I'm going to try it right now.
Oh, no time. We're already late for the art department meeting. It can wait, can it?
Yeah, sure.
Just no. Everything about that, no. Catered staff meetings on Monday morning?
I mean, no. Maybe there would be a bagel platter. That was something that happened when I was an assistant to the editor at a magazine in the late 90s.
Which the junior editor would have to bring in.
Yep.
You're a junior editor. You're lucky if you get a desk. Oh my God, the show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was an assistant to the editor. I had to order the sandwiches. So for sure, that was a thing that happened. Everything else, expense account, I don't think any of the, maybe the editor... in chief had that.
Yeah. No. Also, it's Billy. Like, also, it's one thing Billy. To give these to the other junior editors, but like, he can't even close his mouth.
Yeah. What meetings is Billy having at the like little couch and chairs in his fucking huge office? Like, who is he talking to?
Yeah.
I hate this. I hate it more as it goes on. So let's get to it. Allison gets home from work that night, she's dismayed to hear that she missed a call from Billy. Jane rolls by to see Allison's mopey face and order her to come out with her to Shooters. And of course, as soon as the door has closed behind Allison, the phone rings with a payphone call from Billy. The shot of him on the street. Okay, first of all, he's at a 9X phone, if you wanted to comment on that.
I don't. Just, it's a 9X phone.
The past.
Like, you would not believe when people are like, we can't just change over to a Medicare for all system. And it's like, well, okay, ask the UK how it's done. They did it. Mm-hmm. Like 3 months. It's not that big of a deal. But the other thing that always strikes me about that is like, there was more effort put into letting people know that New York telephone was going to be 9X going forward than there was in like leafleting London to let everybody know about the national health system. Like, guys, this is eminently possible if you just take capitalism's approach to it. Mm-hmm. Ask 9X how they did that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the shot of Billy shambling up the road in New York makes sure to include two unhomed persons like sitting against a wall outside of building as though they don't also have those in Los Angeles, which they do. The next day, Greg is showing off to Billy by pointing out models he knows in a magazine and offering to set Billy up with someone. Billy reminds Greg he has a girlfriend. Greg shades said girlfriend by asking if she's just sitting home waiting for the phone to ring. And Billy's like, which she kind of is. So that's shitty. What Allison is in fact doing is preparing for a meeting with Amanda in the conference room at D&D. She's just gone to get a file when Billy calls. Amanda says that Allison just stepped away instead of stay on the line. She'll be right back. So he asks how Allison is doing. And of course, Amanda says she seems fine. And Billy has to go because I guess he allotted 1 minute exactly for this phone call. So he asks Amanda to tell Allison he called. And when Allison returns 1 second later, Amanda actually does relay the message. obviously, Allison is annoyed that Amanda didn't ask him to hold. And when Amanda reports that he sounded fine, Allison is sad. So that night, Billy is in his furnished apartment in a high rise that the magazine got him to live in when Allison calls. This apartment is so nice. It has wraparound windows and a window seat that his disgusting feet are up on, which Sarah cut a picture of. You can see in the visual aids.
Also, if the can they please treat you to a new pair of Chuck Taylors? Because those are so grotsky. I'm surprised they haven't fallen off.
They are gross. They are bad at talking to each other. This is Allison and Billy, not Billy's shoes. And are less than 30 seconds into the conversation before Billy asks what Allison is wearing, and things devolve from there. Clip 9.
Is this what we've been reduced to, phone sex?
Well, we are on opposite sides of the country, huh?
I mean, what are the alternatives?
Oh, that's pretty cynical.
No, it's just practical. This is the way you wanted it.
I wanted it. You're the one who took a job out there.
Yeah, after you gave me the hard sell on this long-distance thing, promising me it was going to work. Obviously, it doesn't.
Well, excuse me for being an adult, Billy. I was trying to be supportive of your career.
Don't do me any favors.
Listen, Jane's coming over and we're catching a movie. Why don't we talk about this later?
Okay. Whatever. Have a good time.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
The sirens are so good because Billy is on like the 30th floor. He would probably barely be able to hear them. A and B, it's like, we get it. New York has crime. It's bad. We know.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Like nobody ever needs an ambulance in Los Angeles.
Oh, no.
The 90s.
No. Billy wasn't already carjacked one time.
Yeah. Come on, guys.
Anyway. The next day at work, Amanda can tell that Allison isn't doing great and offers to listen if Allison wants to talk about it. Allison tries to downplay how bad things are to save face. It doesn't work. Clip 10.
Allison, you don't have to pretend with me. It's perfectly understandable how you feel. Isolated, like Billy's slipping away, like the relationship is dying a slow death.
Well, that about covers it.
Ordinarily, I'm not one for giving advice, but it seems to me by giving Billy a little time and space, he would only appreciate you more.
Wow. The old absence makes the heart grow fonder routine.
Works. You should just relax, take it easy, enjoy the time alone. It'd be good for both of you. That's what I do anyway.
Yeah. That's the opposite of what she said before, which is, if this is love, don't let it slip through your fingers. But sure, okay.
She's like, now that it's slipping through your fingers, let me rub it in.
Let me pull your fingers apart so it slips through faster. So as soon as Amanda has left the room, Allison picks up the phone, dials a travel agency whose phone number she apparently knows off by heart, and books the next flight to New York, where, by the way, Billy's on his way out for lunch when Greg rolls up with his girlfriend and Andrea, a sexy broad for Billy. She's not even going to make any cracks about L.A. because she's from there, too. Greg asks Billy to join them for lunch, but Billy has errands. The very confident Andrea would love to spend time with a fellow Angelina and asks Billy out for dinner the next night. And he agrees. That was easy. And she's Kelly who, right?
Yes.
Nice.
Arrow's own.
Very good. At said dinner, Billy tells Andrea he doesn't think he'll ever get used to ordering food at a New York deli. People are so aggressive if you aren't efficient in your ordering. Well, fuck. Billy have to get back to work and get your shit together, Billy. This really took me back to ordering salads when I had an office job. I mean, hated those people, too.
Maybe don't go to Katz's for every meal. Like, they are rude, but toughen up, kid.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the restaurant they're at has diagonal white and red striped tablecloths, which I think means it's a TGI Fridays. But anyway.
Yeah.
They agree that they miss L.A., which gives Billy an opening to say that part of the reason he's homesick is that he has a girlfriend. This is news to Andrea, but she recovers quickly, saying she was in the same situation when she first moved to New York. Maybe he'll be luckier. Apparently, the magazine also found a killer apartment for him, he says. I'm still mad. Andrea's crashing with friends, but probably needs to move out soon. She's heard that every apartment in the building where he's staying has a view. He just knows that his does. She would like to see it sometime. And then Allison is getting off the elevator, surprising Billy at his door. He's delighted to see her. And she is less delighted to see Andrea behind him with a glass of wine, immediately turning on her heel and announcing that she's leaving. Allison, not Andrea. Bitch, everyone is still fully dressed. You are being absurd. Like, if there was anything to hide, would Andrea have also come to the door? Think it over. But obviously, Billy goes after Allison, explaining that Andrea is a friend looking at the view, but Allison is not trying to hear it in clip 11.
Come on, there's nothing going on. You've got to believe me.
No, I don't.
You're crazy. What are you doing? You just flew 3,000 miles and now you can turn around and go back?
You're absolutely right. I flew here to tell you something. We are through, Billy.
Oh, this is so stupid.
No, I am. For thinking you might actually try to make this work between us.
I am trying.
Like that? Don't bother.
I mean, don't.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I understand that this would be disappointing, but like, this is very dramatic, even for a soap opera. Like, she's really being ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, really? You're just going to get back on the plane? Like, what is with this show? Do they think we don't understand? Like, it's not the Concorde. You're going to be on a plane for fucking 5 hours again. Like, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, spend the night. Go to a museum. Like, you're already there.
Yeah. Surely you know someone else in New York. Go to a 9X phone and call them up. See if they want to get a drink. At Max Fish. Hey, John.
Finally, our A plot. Joe gets too curious about Reed's business.
Oh, boy.
Back in bed with Reed, Joe muses that she'd always been afraid of the water and boats. He guesses that she never met a captain she could trust. She still hasn't. She gets up to make them coffee in a kitchen, which I think is bigger than the one that she has at home. Picking up the coffee pot, which for contrivance's sake was left clean and empty on the table, she knocks Reed's keychain onto the floor. When she picks it up, she notices the button on the key fob, which, just for the children in our audience, was not standard for cars at the time. Plus, Reed does not have a car anyway, as far as we know. But anyway, she presses the button. And the trapdoor that we saw him install a few episodes ago very loudly pops open. She's just peeking into it when Reed appears, closing it with his foot. She says he scared her and he tries to distract her with kisses. It doesn't work as she asks what's in the hatch. It's just a cargo hold for valuables. He hates lugging stuff on and off the boat all the time. Has it always been there? She asks. Well, he just installed the alarm, which explains the noise. And then Jake is out on the deck, so Reed goes out to see him, reminding him it's Thursday and they have to prep to do a charter. Reed tells him it was canceled. The owner needs the boat that afternoon. Jake is pissed he spent $30 on all the cleaning supplies. Like, Jake, if $30 is breaking the bank for you, please get a real job rather than whatever the scheme is. But anyway.
Yeah. Also, didn't they, like, isn't the boat bought?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the whole point of all the Michigas last time?
Right. Yes.
This, oh my God. Like, if you're going to do this plot, but leave all the, like, financial limited partner machinations out of it because you suck at it.
Yes. Because then Jake is like, he sternly tells Reed to start taking the business seriously. Like, okay, shouldn't job one be buying the boat from the owner? Like, what is all the money for? Exactly. So Reed
also,
tells
cleaning supplies don't go bad. Like,
right.
Just go clean something else.
Yeah. Put them in the huge kitchen. That's what under the sink is for. Anyway, Reed tells Jake he believes in the business just as much as Jake does, but Jake is already in the middle of stomping off. And when we see him next, he's getting up late, having apparently waited an entire day to tattle on Reed to Amanda and complain that he feels like he's carrying the whole operation. It's been a week and Reed hasn't done anything to market the business. Again, I have to ask, do they own this boat yet? Because
thank you.
Not clear. Amanda agrees that the business sounds like it's days away from going under. And then they argue over which one of them has to go yell at Reed, finally settling on doing it together, which they then do. Reed does not appreciate their fearless feedback, and the tone quickly gets heated in clip 12.
You're not getting this, are you?
If this is the way you're going to do business, neither one of us wants to stay involved.
Want to desert like a rat? Fine. Okay, but for your information, this boat is not sinking.
You're dreaming. And for Joe's sake, I hope you wake up.
Enough out of you. Get the hell out of here.
Amanda gets her money back now.
A cashier's check would be preferable.
Is tomorrow soon enough?
No, it's not. But I guess it's going to have to do. Come on, let's go.
Hi, guys. What's up with them?
Oh, I never should have taken any other investors. All I needed was you.
Okay. The thing about the cashier's check also made me think, is he, like, did he go to the trouble of setting up, like, a fake crooked LLC to run all this through? Does he have a bank account to do all this?
Yeah.
Like, how?
Why did you... if you don't own the boat yet, why does he have your money?
Right.
Still.
Uh-huh.
Why are you skeptical about, why is it this?
Yeah.
That he's like, well, the owner canceled the charter. Like the fact that there's still an owner who is not part you, that like now you're skeptical? No.
Right.
Also, does she know about boats or not? are they going to get the... Like, the motivations for this make no sense, and then they keep, like, it's like they want to write these fights to sort of illuminate, like, well, I'm skeptical about Reed, and, like, you should, you, Joe, should be also, and she's like, I don't, you know, need your input. Like, find another way to do it that doesn't involve an S-Corp.
Yeah. Like, at this point, not having seen this season, and, you know, please don't spoil it for me. Not you, I'm telling the listener. I have to assume what has actually happened is that there was an owner. The owner was on the boat at some point. Reed murdered the owner. And that's why he's like has free reign over this boat. And also why he's being so vague about like, well, the owner this and that, the owner, you know, couldn't fix the motor, blah, blah, blah. Like all this stuff that wouldn't make sense if there were an owner anywhere because we have not seen one. They apparently never met one because no one has ever said this person's name. So like that's why he's being so vague, and the money that he's that they are giving him that they think is going to the owner to buy the boat, obviously he is using to buy drugs. That's my best guess, but it still doesn't explain like I want a cashier's check like from what account.
Well, it's like well, you know, I thought he was a con artist, now I don't, now I do again, like please do not put this particular character in the position of being this dumb. Or this, like, particularly soapily dumb about how business is done. Especially since she just found out her own father has been conning her, like, her whole life.
Yes.
Ugh. And also owned a boat.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's just move on.
All right, moving on. Okay, one more thing. Just one more thing. When Amanda was like, the business sounds like it's days away from going under. Like, how much runway did you give this thing to actually work? And what is everyone's responsibility in it? Because it sounds like Jake is on cleaning and engines, and then Amanda and Joe are a question mark. Like, you know, you can't tell if something is going to work in 2 weeks.
And
sorry?
If you don't own the boat yet, which apparently you don't because the charter that you had was under the aegis of another owner, so you wouldn't make money off that anyway.
Right. All right. Actually, moving on. The next day, Joe brings lunch to a harried Reed on the fucking boat. Obviously, she wants to know where the owner is, since he was supposedly the reason the charter got canceled, but Reed evasively says he couldn't make it. See? Murdered. Joe then pulls up a chart and asks where Reed is going. He even more evasively says, maybe Catalina. She asks if she can come, and when he realizes that she's prepared to blow off work, he adjusts his attitude and gets more friendly. So that night on the deck, Reed pours wine and muses about how fast things can turn around. 6 months ago, he was in hell. Look where he is now. Some people might not think off the coast of LA is much of an improvement, but they'd be wrong. Beautiful night, beautiful woman. He caps the line by telling Joey loves her. She's glad he said it first. She loves him too. They kiss on it. And that night, Joe is sleeping alone when a speedboat pulls up alongside the yacht and a cargo handoff occurs. Joe wakes up at the sound of their conversation and comes out to investigate, Reed claiming it was a cruiser passing by too close. And she goes back inside and he stares guiltily at a cooler on the deck that presumably is absolutely crammed with drugs. And the next morning, she wants to get breakfast, but he puts her off officially because he'll never let her leave. And so she lets herself be dismissed. And she's just gotten out of the shower when Jake comes to her door at her apartment. She curtly tells him that if it's about getting Amanda's money back, he'll have to go to Reed directly. But Jake asks to come in and hands her some paperwork he checked on. The serial numbers are fake. According to the registry office, Reed's boat doesn't exist. Joe suggests that maybe the boat is from another state. What? But Jake says Reed told him it was registered in California. Joe is sure there's another explanation. Maybe the papers haven't been filed yet. And Jake presses his point. Clip 13.
I think Reed's up to something illegal.
You amaze me, Jake. Number one, it's not really your concern anymore. Number two, just because you were rooked by Amanda's father doesn't mean that everybody you work with is a criminal. And anyway, if you and Amanda were so unsure about Reed, neither of you should have gotten involved in the first place.
Word!
I'm just looking out for you.
Stop. You're an old boyfriend, Jake. It doesn't exactly make us family.
I mean, look, Joe needs to wake up and smell the coffee wafting through the porthole. It smells like cocaine. And come on, girl, please. Who puts an alarm on their trapdoor on their boat?
Yeah.
Uh-duh. Mm-hmm. However, she makes some excellent points, particularly, like, if you were this skeptical of Reed, why'd you just give him your money? Like, yeah, did you do that since neither of you is getting the D?
It's a fair question.
It is. I know I've asked it 20 times, but I'd still like an answer.
Mm-hmm.
I won't get one. Soap bubbles are the answer. I'm going to move on.
So Jake just snits that if Joe doesn't want anyone looking out for her, he will spread the word around. So she returns to the boat that night. She calls out to Reed, but hears the shower running, so she starts looking around, starting with his jeans. She gets the key fob out again, opens the trap door, reaches in, and pulls out a classic kilo with, for some reason, one open side, which, like, bad packing, guys. But she's just put it back when Reed catches her, and it does not go well for her. Clip 14.
What the hell is this? Answer me!
I don't know what you mean.
You gonna stand there and play dumb? It's down there. I saw the cocaine.
You know, you shouldn't have been snooping around.
I don't believe this. You lied to me. You lied about your prison time, about this boat. You lied about everything.
Everything is going so well. You had to do it, didn't you? You had to ruin everything by being curious. You know what? You killed the cat, Joe.
I'm leaving.
No, I don't think so.
Let go of me.
You're not going anywhere.
Let go of me. You're hurting me.
So that's Reed knocking Joe out, and then he stuffs her in the hold, and goes up to the wheel and starts putting away from the pier, and that's where we leave it. Oh, Joe. Oh.
Like, wait until he's off the boat entirely?
Yeah. Like, how hard is it to get in it? It's a boat. I mean.
Yeah. Also, anyway. You watched TV before. You probably saw an episode of Miami Vice. You didn't have to pick it up. You know what it is.
Yeah. Yes. No, yes. No one packs a manila kilo of baking soda. Like, come on. That is not, in fact, the complete works of Shakespeare. It's drugs.
No, it's not a lamp either.
No. All right. Let's wrap this up by naming our MVP.
Everyone kind of sucks except Sydney.
Yeah, she's pretty good. She works her angles nice.
Good scheming.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say everyone at the editorial staff at Escapade who do not know how good they have it and that it is not going to last. So enjoy it, guys.
Yeah.
Least valuable player.
The CFO of Escapade magazine. Fuck you doing, man. Tighten the belt.
Sure. I'm going to say Amanda, because she really, for all the reasons that we said, should have been a little more sensible with her money, given recent events and also just generally.
Yeah. Next time on Again With This, Sydney extorts a relationship from Michael. Billison takes their relationship to the next level after 72 whole hours of long distance threatens their happiness. And Joe ends things with Reed. Really, really permanently. You and your corneas might be taking a little break from each other after you subject them to our visual aids, which we do for this and every other episode of Again With This. You'll find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or hide out in the hold of our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Overdose Confession Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Hayes Code Farewell Handshake Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Giant Screwdriver of Doom, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.